to the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
You're drowning and I throw you a life jacket. Would you grab it? Yes, good. Pick up 200 shares. I won't let you down.
Pay that man his money.
Ask them how they'd like to see 30, 40% returns. What are they going to say? No? I don't want to see those returns?
Where's the money, Lebowski?
You're going to make a lot of money, right?
Be aggressive. Learn how to push.
Show him a 3% return, and I'll trust you to watch his kids for the weekend.
I'm a big fan of money.
Move around. Motion creates emotion.
I did not know this.
That's it. I'm done.
Well, no thanks. Thanks, Jack. I'm Tim Holly. Just met Weber on the board. A little bit late, Mr. Jack Flanagan calling in. In the meantime, we're going to talk a little sports and the kind of wild day we had yesterday in football and other places. SP Futures down 4, Dow Futures down 37, NASDAQ Futures down 10. This is after a big, huge, how's that for a description, up day on Friday. So I don't think we're all that worried about the little blip down this morning. Might just be a little rest. We'll see if we rally into the end of the year or what we're going to do here. This is a kind of a wild week coming up here. We're coming up on whether or not these tariffs are going to affect in China, which I think is kind of big news. We got a lot of stuff happening, so it should be a key week. We will see. You know, as one guy up in the First Stop Lounge said way back in the day, Matty, this could be a key reversal. Another guy says, what's the difference between a regular reversal and a key reversal? And he said the word key.
That would be the difference.
That would be the difference. So, explain to me, Lucy, if we're talking on the way in, on the immortal words of Jim Finks, said, what do you think about replay? I don't think it's a very good idea. How do you restrict what you're going to look at on the replay? What if you see an obvious holding penalty when you're looking for something else? Well, we've gone how many years now expanding this, contracting it, expanding it? I don't think we got it right yet. I'm just saying.
Yeah, I don't disagree. And I know that if for anyone that watched the Patriots-Chiefs game yesterday afternoon, which was a pretty good game for the most part, but the referees really showed their ugly side yesterday afternoon, missing a ton of calls that went against the Patriots and ultimately, you know, cost them a chance at tying that game and sending
it to
overtime.
At home.
My stance on replay has always been, and I've said this to you before, and I've probably said it on the show before, but I think it should be completely taken out of the coach's hands. It's one more thing that they have to worry about that they usually screw up, and it should just be a simple thing where you get buzzed down, hey, guess what? He didn't step out of bounds. It's a touchdown. And the referee just says, hey, the replay review shows that it was actually a touchdown, and you move on. And it shouldn't take longer than 30 seconds, and you keep it moving. I don't need coaches' challenges. I don't need coaches running out of challenges so then they can't do anything when there's an egregious call. And you only buzz down if it's something that's glaring, like the guy didn't step out, or that was definitely a fumble on the Travis Kelce play that cost the Patriots another touchdown because they were gonna score, it looked like, on that play, and they whistled it dead. The rush were really bad, and they missed some key pass interference calls in some games.
Well, and the whole idea of the whistle not being the whistle if it's a bad call, that has to get sorted out too. If the guy really clear plane, you're going to give it to him, not give it to him. It's almost like the penalty shot in hockey, you know. Did he have a clear plane to the goalie, then it's a penalty shot otherwise? I mean, people are taught, well, in my day, where you were taught from grammar school on, when the whistle blows, you stop. Now it's, oh, no, you better not stop, just in case the ref screwed up in it. How far can that go? Then you got people tackling the guy after the whistle and everything else?
Yeah.
The whole concept of you challenging bad calls, and yet you have a limit. There should be...
Right, it's like you're getting punished for the referees being bad.
Yeah.
Like, the referee misses six calls, and one of them is close, and so you lose that challenge.
Yeah.
Even though it could have gone either way, and now you have no other challenges, and the refs continue to miss calls.
Worse than the ones you challenged in the first place.
Right, much worse. Yeah, that's
maybe, why. Maybe they're missing calls because they're pissed at you for challenging them.
Well, that could be, but I really think you just take it completely out of the hands.
Here's what I think we should do. Just like the in the first Star Trek episode, we'll have the court of public opinion. If 50 tweets get there in 20 seconds and it's a bad call, it's a challenge.
Well, the fans are usually right.
Oh, absolutely. After 15 or 20 replays.
It is funny, like, jokingly saying the fans are usually right, but then a lot of times the fans are right. And you know, for example, all season long with the Bears, the fans were like, let Trubisky run. Why are we not designing run pass options?
His shoulder was hurt.
Well, I get that could have been part of it, but certainly they didn't do it at all.
Because he got hurt running, right?
Even before he got hurt, well, early in the season, they weren't doing it. And then all of a sudden, they do it, and he's a completely different guy. It's like sometimes the fans are right.
Well, they are in the sense that, but they think, how can I go? How can I be nice to people on a Monday morning and still say this? If you never did anything, as my grandmother used to say, if you're just an armchair quarterback, if you listen to Collinsworth last night, a lot of what, you know, the guy says I think is pretty good. He was talking about how the entire right side of the, what team was it? The line is new.
The Rams or the Seahawks?
Rams. And how much quicker they are, and they're younger guys, and how they've gotten their act together on the offensive line, and how they're now all of a sudden, in week 10 or whatever the hell it is, they're putting stuff in, acknowledging the fact that these guys are faster, and they're moving stuff over, and they're, you know, getting that extra second for what's his name that they didn't have 6 weeks ago. The fans have no conception of that. They just assume anyone's with 65, 68, 67 on his back, they're all the same. They're not.
They're definitely not.
And it is, in some lines are bigger, and you can just beat up against people. In pass protection, they probably couldn't run if you saved your life. The other lines are more mobile. You probably don't want to get caught in a string of third and sevens because they're not big enough to just take people on. I mean, the first offensive line, you know, in my young days, designed for the purpose was Eric Coryell in San Diego. I mean, when what's his name was a quarterback. He's still doing color. What the hell's his name?
Dan Fouts.
And that line, every one of those guys was a huge human being. They were just designed to protect Dan Fouts. If you had called a running play, they'd point their finger at themselves. Me? you want me to pull it and go get a guy? What, are you out of your mind? I mean, I'm saying, and there's other teams that have guys that are very mobile, and you can do stuff like moving pockets and things like that. Other guys can have screens. Some of these guys are fast enough to stay ahead of the back, for God's sake, at least for a little while. And it really depends on what you have is what you do. That's why the best coaches are able to put this sort of together. And sometimes it takes weeks and weeks to do it. I mean, it's been that Collinsworth is one of the few announcers that will say, I saw this team 4 weeks ago and they look a lot different and here's why.
Yeah.
I mean, as a fan, you have, I mean, unless you're sort of listening or maybe you're just, I mean, I don't remember one team from the next. I don't even know where the hell starts for the Bears, you know, that much, but you can certainly tell the difference when people, you know, come back and do this stuff. And I thought interesting yesterday is all the stuff that Belichick did, where they said, okay, I think Tony Romo is really good. He says if you're gonna double team Shaq every play, put him in the corner, and they have two guys standing next to him and play 4-on-3, right? So when they kept moving, what's his name, further and further out,
yeah.
And he said, now the inside of the field is gonna be wide open for Brady. Then the one guy got you know, he got deep pantsed out there, and they didn't call that. There's no way that thing should not have been a pass interference. One like the 15-yard line where the guy grabbed his head. It was before the touchdown run. So they got screwed on the no pass interference call, and then they got screwed on the touchdown run. But how do you have a logic that says every scoring play has to be reviewed, and yet every almost scoring play doesn't? What's the difference? Should say every play inside the five-yard line, it looks like the guy might have scored or something. There needs to be different logic to it.
It just needs to be reviewed. It just needs to be looked at. And you looked at it once, and you're like, oh, he stayed in bounds. Touchdown.
But did you see how long that game was?
Can't someone just say that?
I don't know. Did you see how long that game was?
No.
Well, when did 60 minutes start? 10 to 7?
I don't know.
Was that late? Was that late?
That game started at, what, 3:30?
The other afternoon games. One of them, I guess, was Pittsburgh. Have you heard them? They said they welcomed the other 3 to 3 o'clock game, for lack of a better term. They welcomed the other 3 o'clock game like early in the fourth quarter.
Yeah, but those 3 o'clock games are staggered. Some start right at 3. Some start at like 3:25.
Well, this one, but what I'm saying,
I think that
is
one started at like 3:30.
This has to be the latest they've gone all year.
That could be
that game.
Yeah, it could be.
Is Kansas City that
close attention?
Kansas City, other than possibly Oakland for a few years, are they the dirtiest team in football for like five decades?
The dirtiest team. I haven't heard anything about that.
I'm just saying, I've been I mean, when I used to play Oakland back in the day, when Oakland had all the Roid Monsters, the game was like pro wrestling, for God's sake. They still, they're chippy, they nail guys out of bounds, they do all kinds of weird stuff. And then when the one guy put Mahomes, how was that not a penalty?
When he pushed him out of bounds?
Into the water cooler.
Well, I saw that, but I thought when he made contact with him, he was still in bounds. But I wasn't watching it that closely. I was cooking, but I saw it. And he slid way into the, yeah, like you said, the drink table.
But
I think when he got hit, he was still in bounds.
But he was totally gave himself
up. It looked like he
up.
Was kind of giving himself up.
Totally gave himself
and
up.
And anytime you get a shot at the quarterback, those guys are going to take it.
Well, but by the time they really got he got the shove out of his hands, touched him on the field. By the time he really gave him the push in the water cooler, he was off the field.
I just thought, you know, it was a weird game. The Patriots, they really have trouble scoring. Like, they got a turnover, they had a block punt, they, you know, did some stuff out there, and then to only put up 13 points at home. I mean, what the hell?
Well, they've got the thing going now. It used to be Brady dared you to blitz because he would get the ball out that fast. But his receivers now, with the exception of Edelman, have no concept. The one where they blitz you and me from our living room, and he had the guy wide open at 9 yards, and he never turned around.
Mm-hmm.
And Tony Romo's like, "Don't you see everybody blitzing? You got to what do you say? You got to give me your eyes. you got to realize I'm in trouble and I'm looking for you." And the ball was right past his head. He could have caught it easy.
Yeah, no, I know.
I mean, that's
neither quarterback was good. By the way, yesterday Brady was horrible.
Yeah.
19 of 36, one touchdown, one interception, a 63 rating.
How many times did he get hammered?
I don't know.
And a dude is 43 years old.
No, I know. And then Mahomes was a little bit better, but not much. He threw for more yards, 283 yards, but a touchdown, an interception, and just an 83 rating. So both of them were well below average and well below their career averages.
Well, they both got there were so many penalties in the back. I mean, you don't get credit for those. If someone's in a pass interference, what does it do for the quarterback? Is it not as a non-play?
It's like a non-play, yeah.
Okay.
Yep, it doesn't hurt you, it doesn't help you.
So what did you think of the college mess? Poor Arielle, she probably had a lady who works there.
It wasn't a mess at all. It worked out exactly how everyone thought it would.
One
through four, all exactly.
I don't see how Oklahoma snuck in there. I don't think they're that good, but we'll see.
Well, I don't disagree with you, but I mean, who would you put in above them with one loss?
I don't know. Well, and I'm glad Utah didn't, because they absolutely didn't deserve it.
They're terrible. Yeah. I mean, they're not terrible. They had a very nice season, but in that game against Oregon, I mean, they got killed. They were horrible.
See, I thought the Irish should end up playing like Utah or Oregon or somebody like that. Because Utah's going to the Rose Bowl, right? No, yeah.
I think Oregon is.
Oregon is. Well, I mean,
they won the Pac-12, and they're not going to the playoff
teams. So it's Oregon, Wisconsin, and in the Rose Bowl. So the two playoff bowls are what? The Fiesta Bowl and it's a New Year's Day Bowl, but it's not the Orange or the Cotton or the Sugar. The Sugar's got a good game. Sugar's got who? I don't know. I was looking at these last night.
I got to pull up the bowls here.
The Irish surely got dissed. I guess they did because their schedule turned out to not be so good, and it turned out the only two good teams they played they lost to. But
well, so they had two losses. They got absolutely killed at Michigan, and Michigan was good, not great. And who was the other loss?
Georgia, first game of the year.
And Georgia, you know, is good, and that was on the road as well. And Georgia had finished with two losses, and so, you know, those are certainly not bad losses. But I'd have to pull up the schedule to see if they beat anybody.
Well, and then they beat Virginia, they beat Stanford.
Virginia's solid. Stanford's terrible.
Well, but I mean, they're on the schedule, they're not bad. And they ended up drawing the ACC five team.
And they beat USC, who's a bowl team.
And they beat, was it Virginia Tech? What are the other four teams in the ACC they played? They didn't play Miami this year. And they didn't play Clemson. But they, you know, I mean, it's, I mean,
well, if you look, Miami's terrible. So,
but I'm saying
they didn't even make a bowl game.
But if that's a name that you normally, if Miami would have been on the schedule 4 years ago when you looked at it, you said the schedule looks pretty tough,
right?
It turned out not to be. In some years, you know, it turns out that it is.
But no, that's true.
Because when do they make these things? How many years in advance? I mean, it's crazy.
Well, and I don't know how theirs works. With they only play like four quote unquote conference games. They're not really in the conference.
They're not playing Michigan for 21 years,
right? So yeah, they blew out Louisville, who I don't think was very good. Georgia lose a tough one on the road. Bowling Green, obviously not good. Got killed at Michigan. Then they beat up on Duke, who sucks. Beat up on Boston College, who's bad.
With Boston College, they had good years. Duke never is really.
They killed New Mexico, who's, that's a joke.
Yeah.
They, a nice win against Virginia. Virginia's a ranked team. A nice win against USC, who's also a ranked team. Virginia Tech, they beat by one. And I think Virginia Tech is a bowl team. They killed Navy, and Navy's a bowl team. So those aren't terrible. And then they beat up on Stanford, who's having a down year. But it seems like Iowa State's a bit beneath them for the bowl opponent, I would think. Yeah. Iowa State is just 7-5, and Iowa State played a tough schedule. But still, I think Iowa State just got rewarded because they played a really tough schedule.
Well, I mean, you should, I suppose. But I mean, it's not something you can really. You can't really deal with it. You know, it's a. I mean, I don't know. I mean, there were times when they played. I mean, I can remember. Well, you know, I've been around a while. Where was I going with this? This one thing I sent myself. I gotta tell you, Betty. I don't know if it's we can do this on the show, but we will because it's early. With the I think you should. But how do you? I don't know how this college football is going to start. Going to work out here is, I guess, where I'm going with this, because you've got Stanford with, like my buddy Beldo said, you know, late August they only had 58 people on scholarship. It's seemingly that some of these teams that are far in advance can get these. But I'm saying, in my lifetime, I know I'm skipping around because I'm reading articles here. The fact that they played, you know, four or five Big Ten teams. They played Purdue. They played Michigan State every year. And then they played Michigan, you know, once in a while. But Michigan State and Purdue were gimmies. And they always played like one or two others.
Right.
So the idea was, man, how could you, and then they played Southern Cal. So how could you possibly accuse anybody who played three or four Big Ten teams of having a weenie schedule? You
know? Right.
And then all of a sudden then, you know, Purdue became and also ran Michigan State's marginal usually now. So now all of a sudden that became a crummy schedule. So you lob into the ACC. Now you end up here and have to play five teams in there. Okay, well, Pitt used to be one hell of a team on your schedule from time to time.
Sure.
And now, well, they suck, basically. And, you know, I mean, not every year, but now all of a sudden you get the five teams and they're like, oh, I don't know, those guys suck. You know, so I mean, I think
like Florida State is not what they used to be. Miami's not what they used to be. Clemson has become the team you really need to play if you want a big time schedule.
Right.
And I don't know if you want to play them.
Right. Well, you don't want to play them the same year Southern Cal's good.
Then you have a gauntlet, and you really have no chance.
But I don't
unless you're having a great year.
Well, you know, the weird part is that I was a lot of stuff about that game last night. All they did was talk about Pete Carroll's spectacular record in Southern Cal. You know, I know in our business, whenever you say something, you're supposed to be fair and give both sides. Didn't he leave the school in shambles?
Yeah, he cheated. Of course.
Yeah, but somewhere
all the great college coaches cheat.
But someone, but they had to forfeit all the games he won.
Yeah, I think they had to quote unquote take the banners down. I think.
Yeah. So I mean, how is it?
But he still. I mean, the guy was still a great on field coach. Like they won.
I'm not sure what the story was, the Reggie Bush thing, but.
He went to the NFL just in time, and he's had a great NFL run. He's been there like 15 years in one place, like. Besides Belichick, has anyone done that? It's like Belichick and then Tomlin. It's Pittsburgh's been there a long time, and then Pom Pete Carroll. Those are like the longest tenured guys.
Well, you know, he was
Andy Reid's been the Kansas City for a while now.
You know, he's the fourth choice at Southern Cal. I researched this last night. Four, three other people said no, and
they haven't been relevant since.
As soon as when they picked him, the amount of letters they got, like 1,000 letters saying it was a horrible pick because he'd coached. In pros for like a year.
He was the Patriots head coach.
Yeah, he got
took them to the playoffs. He was the Jets head coach. I think he took them to the playoffs.
But he had a lousy record in a pro.
No, I know. He was the middling coach as far as record. He was a lot of 9-7, a lot of 8-8.
Yeah.
But he did take them to the playoffs, but he did get fired from both jobs, and then he went down to the college ranks, and yeah, it probably wasn't considered an exciting hire, and then he had USC rolling, where they were getting the number one quarterback every year. and they were competing for a national championship.
You know, his big recruiter was his kid.
Really?
Yeah, his kid was like the receivers coach or something. But he was the same age as a lot of those guys.
And Pete Carroll is an older guy, much older than you would think he is. Yeah.
I met him. He's very, very pleasant.
But I mean, he has energy like you would think he's.
It's unreal. Yeah. He's the ever-ready bunny.
He's 68, but you would think he's still in his late 40s, just how he acts.
So, Manny, who is this? I'll get her name in a second here. Did you read this bizarre story? This is the things you should stay away from. Not that you're kind of a guy. You know who Jane Slater is?
It sounds familiar.
NFL correspondent Jane Slater.
Yeah, I know who that is.
She ends up, I don't know if she and her boyfriend exchanged Fitbits. Did you read this story?
Oh, yeah, I read this story.
Is this wild or what?
It's funny. She said they got each other Fitbits for Christmas or something several years ago when she was dating this guy. And they synced them up together because they were working out together and, like, motivating each other and, like, tracking, you know, the results. So they basically have.
So how stupid are these people?
You can go ahead and tell it from there.
Well, the preamble of the story is one of the first people that got the Apple Watch. Of course, Dr. J gets the thing, right? So he's sitting here after a show one day, and he's calling up Apple because the thing's not working right. So he calls the guy, hits his knucklehead on the phone, and the guy goes, yeah, yeah, there's something wrong with the software in here. He's right, I can, like, fix it from here. And he goes, something to Jan. He says, well, I can tell what you're doing all the time. I can tell if you're working out. I can tell if you're essentially doing the deed. Or if you're just at rest, I can tell. And I said, Jan, you are going to take that thing off now, aren't you? He's like, what do you mean? What do you mean? What do you mean? So evidently the guy's heartbeat would fly it up at, what, 4 a.m. or something?
Yeah, apparently it showed... It showed some increased levels at 4 a.m. And she basically caught him cheating.
by the way, what was your heartbeat doing up? Oh, you wouldn't believe there was a fire alarm in the building. what have we done to ourselves? I mean, are we? Good Lord, man! I can't even begin to. I just, you know, what can I say? I can't go into it much more than that. I'm just saying, what have we done to ourselves? I don't even. Anyway, the playoffs right now, we've done everything but talk about the standings. What's going on in the playoffs? Who's where? The football.
Give me a sport. Okay, NFL.
NFL. We do that every Sunday, every Monday.
Yeah, NFL real quick, a couple minutes before break here. Not a good day for the Bears yesterday because, they could have used some help and they didn't get it. Last night, the Seahawks completely laid an egg, and the Rams improved to 8-5, so the Bears are now one game behind them, and the Rams own the tiebreaker over them, so they're essentially two games behind them, which is not good. That would have been a game that you would have liked the Rams to lose. They also got no help from the Lions, which you wouldn't expect, and the Vikings had no issue taking care of the Lions, so the Vikings are now 9-4, two games up on the Bears. And then the Packers also won at home, so the three teams you're kind of chasing right now in the standings, the Rams for the wild card, the Vikings for the wild card, and then the Packers for the division, all won. So now, even if, you know, the Bears win out, they still need some more help.
Well, so who do they play? They got to play,
the Bears are at Green Bay.
Okay.
Then they host the Chiefs, and then they're at Minnesota. So they get two cracks at beating teams ahead of them. So that's good. Of course, you got to win, and they're both on the road, so that's not good. And then their one home game left is against one of the best teams in the NFL, the Chiefs. So the schedule, you know, going into this season, the Bears had the number one toughest schedule in the league. I don't know if it's still considered number one because, you know, teams are a little bit better or a little bit worse than you thought going into it. But they play the Packers twice, the Vikings twice, they play the Saints, they play at the Eagles, they play at the Rams, they play the Cowboys, they play the Chiefs. So that's a lot of playoff teams on the schedule, and a lot of road games too against good teams. And they're 7-6.
Well, so the Cowboys still going to make it? Well, somebody in the division is going to make
it. Yeah, it's either going to be the Cowboys or the Eagles, and neither they might not be above 500, but yeah. they're going to host a playoff game. So,
well, so what's the rumor with what's his name going there? Urban Meyer.
I haven't Urban Meyer to the Cowboys.
Yeah,
I have not heard that. That would be interesting. I wonder. Typically, I would say college coach going to the NFL is not going to work, but you never know.
Yeah, he was in, what was he in?
Like
he
when Nick Saban went to the NFL, I mean, he was horrendous and got run out of the league. Would Urban Meyer, would it, that work in the NFL? I doubt it, but it could.
Yeah, he was, he was, and one of the college things yesterday.
The pregame shows or something?
Yeah, yeah. Or doing one of the things that or Saturday. And they were telling him, yeah, the rumor is that he's talking to the people at Dallas or something. So, yeah, I don't know if that's, you know, if that's the deal or not. Anyway, we get the S&P futures and stuff here. We'll come back. We'll have Mr. John Flanagan. A lot of real interesting stuff happened this weekend. And did you read about the guy who got buried in the USS Arizona, Manny? We'll talk about that a little bit. S&P futures up down 2.25. Be right back.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com, and that's PTISecurities.com.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Stocks. Jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here. Right now. Right here. Right now. Right now.
Lower Base Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tim Allen. Just been over the board with Mr. Jim Flanagan here in a second. We have S&P futures, like all kinds of screens being refreshed here. We have S&P futures down $2, Dow futures down 21, NASDAQ futures down 650, so slightly lower after a big move up on Friday. Our guys heading pretty expressway, Matty. DAX down 26.2%, FTSE down 9.1%, CAC around down 23.4%, but still lower there, but marginally. Nikkei up 76.3%, Shanghai up 2, call that flat. Hang Seng down 3, call that flat. Bonds, 1.82 on our side. The Bund, minus 0.30. You ready, Mary? Betty, you got some, like, symbols there? Japan, minus 0.01. Can't go any higher without being positive. Maybe tomorrow. What do you think? We got gold, 360, 1468. Silver up 8 cents. 1659, but way below that $17 number. Not sure why, with the money supplies going up all around the world, these things are still struggling, but they are. Oil down 62 cents, 58.58, still the upper end of the range. Brent down 64, 63.75. Natural gas, even with the cold weather coming this way, 222, down 11 cents. Evidently this cold thing that's coming, Maddie, was supposed to be zero, now we're only supposed to get down to like 10 or 12. It took the wind right out of natural gas. Arbob Dower 62. What do you got for us, Traffic Weather Sports?
37 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. Off to a decent start on the area expressways, roadways, and tollways, but we do have some slow travel times on the Kennedy and Eisenhower. No accidents to report, just some earlier issues that have caused a slowdown at this early start. Also, US 30 at I-55. Down in the southwestern suburbs, there is a crash. But no issues coming in on the Ryan, I-57, or the Bishop Ford. Stevenson looking okay, and the Edens looks good too. Just some slow spots on the Eisenhower and Kennedy. Off the expressways, Fullerton at Western Avenue, there is a crash in the city. But everything else looking good out there. Weather today will be rainy today with mild temperatures early, a high of 49. Then temperatures will drop tonight about 25 to 30 degrees and will be cold the next couple of days. Right now it's overcast and 47 with rain in the area going up to a high of about 49 right near where we're at right now. For our Phoenix listeners, partly cloudy skies with a high of 64 today. Right now it's cloudy and 55. In sports, NFL football, the Bears, of course, did not play yesterday, having played on Thursday night, but they didn't get much help, as we talked about before the break. Packers, Vikings, and Rams all won yesterday, with the Rams blowing out the Seahawks on Sunday Night Football last night, 28-12. It was the Arizona Cardinals losing to the Steelers at home, 23-17. In hockey, the Stocks and Jocks Cup saw the Arizona Coyotes atop the Blackhawks 4-3 in a shootout. Bulls lost to the Heat in overtime yesterday, 110-105. And in college hoops, not a great day for our local teams. DePaul suffered their first loss of the season. They fell to Buffalo, 74-69. And it was Northwestern losing its Big Ten opener at Purdue, 58-44. Chief.
Says here, genius Japanese... Hey, John, how are you?
I'm good, Tom, and you?
All right. Hey, it says, genius Japanese invention allows you to instantly speak 43 languages. That means I could learn to speak real English instead of Southside? I don't care about the other.
You can add the special version of that.
Yeah, I don't care about the other 42 languages. I just want English. Unbelievable. Hey, a lot of times we talk about what's not so right with the world on this show. Once in a while, you got to lob a couple of good ones in there, and I'm going to pick on John here this morning to talk about two stories here, human interest stories that I think really are, one, kind of tell you where we are in terms of history, and not that far away from some pretty bad history. The other is, but what if, for instance, John, you and I were touring Pearl Harbor, and all of a sudden we were to see a funeral where somebody's remains were interred into the USS Arizona? Would that bring a tear to your eye or what?
Yep. I heard that on the radio over the weekend, you know, about the seaman who was brought back after his, you know, cremation or whatever, and his remains are interred in the Arizona. I didn't know anything about this tradition at all.
Neither.
So I was quite interested to read more about it.
Matt, did you hear any of this?
No.
Evidently, since it's a memorial and it's still a, I use the term, it's not been, has it been stricken? It's a memorial, so it's like a cemetery. So
right.
So you have a, if you were a seeing this guy on December 7th, 1941, then 21-year-old Loren Bruner was the second to last man to escape the burning wreckage of the USS Arizona. So the guy dies last week. There's three people left that escaped the Arizona. You have the option of being buried back on the ship. And his family went out there, and he survived two wives. I don't know if he has any family left or whatever, but he's 98 years old, married twice, had living both wives. Worked for a refrigeration company, of all things, for four decades. They have a diver in the water. The family comes out there, and they hand the remains to the diver. They do the flag ceremony. The diver heads down and plunks the, you know, the urn somewhere in the ship or whatever, and he's interred in the ship. And tell you what, it can't be a dry at that thing. There just can't be. And there's three people left that 44 people have done this.
Yes, that I had no idea.
I had no idea about that. And but he's going to be the last one because the other three survivors claim they're going to be buried, you know, with family members in cemeteries or something. Well, the only other place you can do this is the battleship Utah, which was overturned. And evidently, what, there's 60 bodies in there too, right, John, or something like that?
Yeah, I think that there's like over 900 in the Arizona.
1177. Well, now 1178. Right.
Wow.
And he, there's one of the three guys remaining wants to be put back on the Utah. So the thing's overturned. So what's the diver got to go underneath and
it sounds like
I
think the Arizona burial recently, the cremains were deposited in a gun turret somewhere inside, you know, where the gun is mounted. So it's not the easiest thing to do, probably above water, let alone below water. So this is fairly, you know, hard to do stuff, and you really have to hand it to people who do this, and the power of that moment. I mean, that's pretty amazing, really.
Well, the diver can't, you can't go in it, right? Because it's a tomb. You can't desecrate the tomb, right?
Right.
Bizarre.
Peel anything away. You can't remove anything. Nothing like that. So
you must just find an open hole and drop it, for lack of a better term. I mean, anyways, but then I don't know if you've ever seen a picture of the Utah, man. It just, all you see is the bottom of the ship. And they stopped trying to get people after, what, like 10 days? They kept trying to cut through the hull because they thought people might still be in there. It turns out they got into one area at one point, John, and they found out the people lasted a lot longer than they thought they did. Horrible.
That shook everybody up
a
lot.
Anyway, you see this stuff, you know, wasn't that long ago, and we're going to swing fast forward here to, if anybody didn't catch this story, I mean, the story's on a weekend and it's hard to catch, but a lady named somebody called Margaret Hamilton, Manny? Wheaton's first female mayor. Yeah, she's got the nice looking lady, not that that matters, but she's got the total 50s, do in the 50s eyeglasses at, which are spectacular, but, this has not been this long. She was active in the Wheaton's League of Women Voters. The first woman elected to Wheaton City Council in 1961. She became mayor in 1969. But the interesting part, and what I thought you were specially to talk about, Jan, had to do with deeds. When she was, originally she lived in Barrington. And during, evidently, the war, after the war, 104, she'd have been alive during the war. They wouldn't let children of Japanese descent go in the local pool because we were fighting Japan. And she
she apparently made a phone call to the Park District in Barrington, or you were threatened, you know, action, that this had nothing to do with the interment of their parents, that these were, you know, American-born citizens. You couldn't keep them out of the pool, and they right away changed the policy.
Yeah.
So that kind of, like, woke her up. It's like maybe the system's a little easier to change than I ever realized.
Well, then she moves to Wheaton, which I wouldn't wish on anybody, basically. And why did that place start? I know it was some kind of religious shindig, but and this is what I wanted to ask you, when she got there, I think early on, Audrey tells me that you, I don't know, when you get a deed to a house, I mean, I've owned a couple of them, but I never really, how can I say this? I never read the damn thing. No, I mean, normally you just figure a deed's a deed, but evidently, out there originally, the deed in there said you couldn't resell the house to anybody who drank alcohol, right, Jan?
Yeah.
How does that even work?
These were covenants that were privately entered into and privately enforceable. And I know about these because my dad's grandfather was one of the precinct workers who did the footwork to sign people up for a lot of these covenants in the 20s when they became instruments to keep neighborhoods white, and keeping people who were black from buying houses. If you were Jewish, you could be barred. You could really bar anybody you wanted to. And the way it worked, you would go to a homeowner in a block, and real estate companies and homeowners associations would coordinate this, but you would be asked to sign a covenant that you would not sell this property to a list of restricted classes of people. And if you could get 60% of the homeowners in a given block to sign the covenant, everybody's property in that block was subject to the covenant.
Who made that rule?
It would show up as a cloud on your title. And this became like 1926, 1927, the late 20s, these things flourished in Chicago, especially in the South Side. And it was pretty hard to find properties in the South Side that weren't subject to some form of these covenants.
Was there a state law that allowed this?
Oh, it was a private agreement. It would be like, you know, your subdivider said you couldn't build a house closer than 15 feet to the sidewalk, or, you know, only single-family residences. It was quasi-zoning thing. That there was no, the state was not involved in it. It was a contract between, you know, buyer and seller. And the enforcement measure was that if you breached this covenant, your title reverted to the subdivider of that lot, meaning that you had just lost your entire sales proceeds. You had nothing to sell. So some of them were draconian. Title would revert.
I'm not an attorney. How's that even? I sell Matty Weber my Suburban, and I'll tell him he can never sell it to a female. 30 years from now, he sells it to what do I still have anything to do with that Suburban after I sold it to him?
Well, that's the thing. I mean, the subdivider is probably long dead.
Yeah.
Do the heirs really care about this? But legally, you had no title to sell. Your breach of that covenant deprived you of your property.
But what value did I get for that? In other words, I didn't get a discount for doing that. So it wasn't like
you got the comfort that you weren't going to offend your neighbors by doing something that they had voted, you know, nobody in the block should do.
What I'm saying, I guess, is it, well, I'm going back to the basic. There's such a thing as a basis of law. Where's the harm to that guy? How can he sue me for damages? How's he damaged?
You mean the seller of the property?
Yeah, if it's 30 years later, how's he damaged?
Oh, he's, you know, the damage would have occurred, you know, when he sold to one of these undesirable classes listed in the covenant. And that was, it was the fear of what would happen if you did that that prevented you from doing it at all.
There's
very few instances I know of where there was any action to, you know, have title actually revert to some unknown group of people from the past. But the fear of having to, you know, prove, you know, your title up in such a situation deterred anybody from breaking the covenants. So they were, it was the sort of thing, well, if you run the risk of losing everything you had invested in this property, is it worth it? No, you'll just, you know, sell to somebody else.
Right, well,
that was the sort of Damocles hanging over these people, because the enforcement measure was so extreme that it was better not to get close to it or run afoul of it. So I'm not really sure how frequently or, you know, seriously it was ever tested in that way, but it was pretty ironclad until after World War II, when they were declared unconstitutional. But even then, in 1948,
was that a federal declaration or state?
It was a case that arose out of St. Louis. They had the same sort of covenants there. It went to the U.S. Supreme Court, and the U.S. Supreme Court struck down the enforceability of such covenants. But what it didn't strike down was their private, you could continue to abide by the covenant if you wanted to. In other words, you could decline to sell your property to one of these prohibited people and not run afoul of the law. If that person thought that they had been denied the right to buy the property because you were enforcing this covenant, they could sue and you would lose. But the private enforcement of these was not changed at all in 1948. And this was back when conflicts of interest really did matter. Three U.S. Supreme Court justices recused themselves from the decision because they owned property subject to such covenants.
Really?
So,
I knew you'd know about that. I guess, as my aunt used to say, you need to educate yourself. I'm missing the part about not criminal law, what do they call it, tort law? Doesn't most tort law presuppose damages? I mean, if the neighbors, if my house is worth $1.50, all right, well, which probably wouldn't have been in those days, and all of a sudden some Jewish guy, some black guy, or some lady walks by and says, I'll give you $1.75, how the hell am I or anybody else, certainly the guy who gave it to me, or any of the neighbors being hurt by it? It looks to me like they just did pretty good.
Yeah, it was really an attempt to kind of extort, behavior from out of people who really didn't have much to lose. If you could sell your property for a profit to some one of these prohibited classes of people, you weren't really out anything. It was what you were doing to your neighbors and their property values that was seen as some sort of a.
Well, living on the South Side, I will tell you the logic of the time was, if a black guy paid $25,000 over the other places, the other people would think they were getting shafted, that they were going to have to drop their price because the black guy's now there. There's no doubt that was
right.
The mentality.
Right.
And the message to you, Matty, is this was not that long ago. Scary. It's
well, I
scary,
remember when my parents bought the house I grew up in during high school in Beverly. This was 1966. The racial restrictions that were enforceable in that block since 1928 were still shown on the title policy. And the thinking was, well, no, this isn't enforceable in any circuit court anywhere around here. But you should know what this property has been bound by in the past, such that if you go in and think you're going to upset the apple cart and there won't be any consequences, you need to know there could be consequences. People might shun you. They might torch your house. They might kill your dog or something else if they thought you were the one who was trying to break this covenant. So the title companies continue to show these as clouds on title. And this is, I think, what happened in the Margaret Hamilton case, where I think it was 1950 they bought a house and they had put the covenants on her deed, and she wanted that removed, but it was a private action between her and the seller. They got these things.
Well, evidently, this lady was no stranger to the burning cross in the grass.
Right. Oh, yeah, that happened to her too.
Yeah.
And then, well, in 1968, then the Civil Rights Act, for housing discrimination, barred these covenants from even being shown as private clouds on title. So that there was no way you could privately enforce these covenants after 1968, so they became extinct. Even to the extent of being shown on a deed or in a title insurance policy, you couldn't even disclose them, even though they were technically there.
You remember,
have any unwind date in them, but there was no way they could be enforced publicly or privately.
You remember way back in your youth, on Western Avenue was a real estate place called Hilltop.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Well, my mom was and she'd always worked, when my dad died and so forth, she'd worked for 4 years and worked for a while after that, and my stepfather's doing better, so she becomes essentially a stay-at-home mom, and all of a sudden, Dan and I are, getting to a point where she doesn't have to be with us all the time, so she gets a part-time job and she'd been involved in real estate and banking and did mortgage closings and so forth, so she gets a part-time job at this Hilltop, and she's there for like a week, and one night she says, I'm reading these addresses of these places I'm doing all this paperwork for. Seems like they're in Canada's dicey area over in Roseland. She goes, I'm not feeling too good about this. All of a sudden, the paper shows up, like the next morning, and there's a firebombing of some house over in Roseland, and it was a house that we just got sold by Hilltop. So they were essentially, what they used to call it, something busting, block busting.
Yeah.
So she walked in that morning and said, "I'm not working for a Blockbuster. See you guys," and walked out. She goes, "You're not doing that. I'm not going to be anywhere associated with you guys." And left. That lasted about 2 weeks at shop. but she would have none of it. I mean, she grew up in a went to Inglewood High School, was very integrated, and was absolutely not for anything like that, which was pretty rare in the South Side in those days. But she, you know, came from a different group. My grandfather didn't want any Italian spoken in the house. We're Americans now. He refused to live in the Italian neighborhood. He lived in Inglewood. You know, she went to Inglewood High School, and we're supposed to be all here together, and you're not supposed to go live like you're still living in Italy, you know, type of thing. And
yeah,
he was a little unusual, sort of, in that regard. But anyway, we had a kind of a quiet weekend. We had a big week in the market last week, John, but somewhat of a quiet weekend, I'm going to say, politically, at least relatively. You know,
but might be the calm before unknown storm here.
Yeah, well, we have clear challenge issues, you know, bucking up against the president, and I think the president has at least tried to do some decent stuff, and now these guys are kicking, you know. And it seems like everything you do, that, in my opinion, Janet, is kind of screwed up. I don't know if this is a legal term, comes to bite you in the ass. And you know, Trump, I think, has done some of the motivations with the stuff with Korea and with China and Iran. I really applaud the guy for. But I don't, I mean, Kevin and I and a lot of the other people from the right on the show are sort of, they agree with me in the sense that you got to be careful how your methods are, because you're being read by the other side. And I think it's a huge mistake, you know, for anybody, not just him, to totally differentiate yourself from the politics and policies in terms of national defense from whoever was before you. You know, to your discredit, to where I'm doing this stuff, Obama was an idiot, you know, Bush didn't do anything either, Clinton was a moron, to where you're the only person that is willing to be hard on North Korea. You're the only person, you know, not willing to kowtow to Iran like he thought John Kerry did, or at least he said John Kerry did. But now all of a sudden you got, you know, 1 year to go. You may win again. I mean, I had probably a pretty good chance he'll win it again. But now you're reaching a point where these guys are going, the reason why I think his policies are so different against the people he's running against is because he's the one who's telling me that. So all we got to do is outweigh this guy. We might be okay. I think it comes when you do stuff like that that makes kind of no sense. I really think that when you're fighting a big battle like I think he is, the more people around you and the less you use the word I, the better off you are. That's just my style.
Well, right, it came pretty clear, I think, during the hearings in the Intelligence Committee the week before last with you know, the former ambassador to Ukraine and some of the other people from the inner workings of the State Department who I think demonstrated pretty publicly whether they were aware of doing it or not, but that there was a counterforce in the State Department to what Trump has declared to be the policy and of the people that he's appointed, you know, to implement the policy that he wants. And there's lots of blowback within the very departments that he has executive control over that have not gone along with him and really kind of actively have worked against him and undermined his authority, which, you know, that to me was maybe... It could be, you know, the sign of Trump's naivete or the naivete of people around him, but I was kind of shocked to see it play out in public the way it did, that these people claim to know more about the direction of U.S. policy than the president and thought it was within their power and it was their duty to tinker with it.
But he changed his mind every 30 seconds.
Kind of flabbergasted me, really.
You know what?
And that they're held up as heroes.
Well, let's talk about that after the break, because
yep.
In virtually every situation, now I would agree with you. When somebody changes their mind every 30 seconds, I don't know where you are. I mean, that's an issue. Unfortunately, S&P futures are down 250. Nasdaq futures down 8. Be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
Hello, I'm David Andelman, founder and president of DAX Research, a registered commodity trading advisor. I'm also a wealth manager with PTI and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio show. For more than 30 years, professional traders at the CME, including four past CME presidents, have chosen DAX Research to help guide their trading. That same research is available to you. We are offering three research newsletters: the Daily News, our Daily Stock and Futures Trading Recommendations, and our twice weekly top three tiers of recommended stocks. Each of these reports are available via email. To benefit from the same research professionals have used for more than three decades, call me and get 2 weeks free with a one-month subscription, or you may also call me for a free portfolio analysis to see how we can work together to build your future. I'm David Andelman, president of DAX Research. Call toll-free 1-800-821-4968. Stock and futures have risk of loss and are not suitable for everyone.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed-income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Hi, this is John Neal from PTI Securities and Futures and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, as well as the branch manager of our Peoria, Arizona location. I hope you, like many of our listeners, have benefited from the outstanding market returns of the last several years. But have you recently become unsettled due to the worldwide geopolitical uncertainty, the increased volatility of commodities and currencies, or the looming Federal Reserve interest rate hikes? If you have answered yes to any of these questions, we can help you. Here at PTI, we offer a unique variety of income-producing securities as well as our proprietary hedging program to protect your assets. More information about these exciting programs and much more can be obtained from our website at PTISecurities.com, or feel free to email me at john@PTISecurities.com. That's JOHN@PTISecurities.com.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, Jocks,
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
There's something happening here.
Hello, everyone. Face Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howell. Mr. John Flanagan. Mr. Matt Weber on the board. S&P futures down 250. NASDAQ futures down $8. I'd have to say, I'm going through my emails here, that this is a record weekend from the absolute, I'll say, the rightest of the right wingers. I don't think they got any sleep at 8 all weekend. John, I think there's something about this weekend. There must have been something in everybody's coffee. I've got stuff on every subject. Now, something about how we need to make sure we have our guns because when the Civil War starts, we want to be armed. This is the right. Okay, now. So you got that to look forward to. Just saying. Now, here a guy like me, since I never even went and got a gun or anything, but my FOID card overlawing that thing last, I re-upped for the thing like 3 months ago. I still don't have it. Are they telling me something? Am I a little too liberal or what?
Uh-oh.
I don't know. This is bad. This is, anyway, what you were talking about, I don't know how you have all this stuff going on, Jen. There's people in all these areas, and I think when we talk about policies that have been in place somewhat for a while, I think you need to, if you're going to change one or you're going to go someplace and you're going to leave people there in those jobs, and I know you personally would do this, you need to take some time and you have to sit there and say, this is the direction it looks like we've been going. Correct me if I'm wrong, because you're the guys that do this all the time. I think that maybe another way is better, and here's why. I think you need to get, if you're a leader, especially if you're a leader on so many subjects, I mean, nobody could possibly have as much diverse conversations during a day on different topics as the President of the United States. You can't. It can't just be a one-word letter or a tweet. You've got to somewhat convince people, especially when your style is that 3 days later you change your mind or you forget about it. It's not a question of when you say if the president wants to go this direction, should you as essentially his employee resist him every step of the way? The answer, I mean, in anybody's mind is going to be no. But it also depends, like everything, as you and I age, the answer to every question starts to become, it depends, right? Unfortunately. I mean, are we really changing total policy in South America because we don't like this new ruler, or we don't? Do we like his policies? Are we still going to do aid? Are we still going to? I mean, every one of these questions. I mean, it's my biggest. At the end of the day, it's my biggest concern about this particular president. Is he's like the guy drinking a beer in the wife beater T-shirt watching a football game. That thinks he could be quarterback tomorrow. No, you can't. There's so much into it. I mean, if you listen to the game last night, May and I were talking about it on the way in, at Collingsworth, we'll talk about the reason why this team looks different than it did 4 weeks ago is because they got two new offensive linemen that are faster than the other guys. Now you can roll the pocket out. You couldn't before. There's a million lines of detail to every one of these, quote, policies that have been around and change and evolve over the last 50-100 years. You know, They're not one-liners. They're not feelings from the gut. And I think a lot of the people at work, and whether they're, I think a lot of the people you're talking about might actually be Republicans. I mean, it's not like they're all Democrats and all from the other side.
Of course, right.
I mean, I think it's somewhat of a style problem more than it is something else. Does he really know what he's talking about? It's like, you know, if Jerry Jones runs into the coaches meeting, says, I want to throw more, and heads upstairs and doesn't realize his two offensive tackles are in there in knee braces. Okay, Jerry, let's throw more, but let's get our quarterback killed, you know? You know, that's kind of way I think the attitude towards him is in a lot of ways, and I'm not so sure it's all that wrong. But he's still in charge.
I guess that's something that Trump has always had working against him from the get-go, and he hasn't resolved it, you know, and maybe and certainly probably never will with a lot of people, but his style of management comes out of, you know, of history that you don't see reflected in government workings for the most part. He's kind of the new kid on the block, and it's still, you know, it's upset a system that has always worked in a very different way. And I think Trump, to some extent, you know, realized early on that he couldn't even trust a transition team. When you look at what happened to Mike Flynn, it was just, you know, he was a newcomer, and he right away is being sabotaged by Comey and the FBI and set up to humiliate him and bankrupt him with legal expenses when all he was doing was kind of laying a groundwork for his capacity in the new administration, which is what transition teams do. I think Trump realized this isn't being extended to me as it normally would be, and right away I think he was, you know, put in a position where he had to kind of react to people who were trying to undermine him and doing it under the guise of something other than what it was, which was just, you know, you're not the boss here, we are.
Well, the Flynn thing, though, Jan, is...
The deep state phenomenon has really gotten some legs because of the way, not so much Trump, but what people on the other side have done. I mean, I firmly believe in the deep state now, given how the people who claim there isn't a deep state are acting. So... It's unfortunate, and I think Trump is not somebody, you know, who's ever going to make a kind of a neat segue into something different from what people are used to.
I would, one
of least likely to make it happen. So.
I would be, I've never had it labeled as such, the deep state, okay, but I liken it to Chicago. The people that are in power, seemingly always are in power, really behind the scenes, that always get the... You know, despite new mayors, despite everything, they seem to get the best corners, the best zoning, the best this, the best that. And I don't know, I wouldn't call it deep state. I think it's foolish to say they're all Democrats.
Right. It's just the machinery that has developed its own kind of reason for being and has a life apart from the people who really are its bosses. And it survives administration, you know, goes on. It's got people who have been there forever, and party affiliations don't really mean much for anymore.
But, I mean, why would you pick, I mean, just in the Flynn case, but let's say, you know, Comey had some sort of vendetta against, you know, whatever. I don't know what's in the man's mind, but let's say he did. Well, don't give him Flynn. The guy is an easy fish. We're talking about a guy that, according to Lou anyway, and Lou is as right as they come, says that, hey, when you're a retired general, you're not supposed to be, you know, being a consultant for like another government, for God's sake, while you're taking the check. You know, and yet here we are, the guy's giving a speech at some Russian dinner and sitting at Putin's table. I mean, don't give him somebody that easy. You know, nobody had a problem with Rex Tillerson. You know what I'm saying? I mean, Flynn is one of these guys that he's getting his check every month, and it appears he's running around in the middle of these, becoming one of these carpetbaggers between place and place, and consulting for the guy in Ukraine and consulting for. I mean, what are they doing, John? I mean, don't give them guys like that. Be more intelligent on who you pick.
Well, I think the Flynn case, I mean, I really feel for how Flynn has been treated in all this, and to me, he's one of the saddest casualties, because I don't see really anything wrong in what he is alleged to have done. To me, it was a conversation in passing with a Russian ambassador.
I'm not talking about that. I could very well agree. I mean, I don't know enough about it. You probably know more about it than I do, Kevin. There's no. But it's not like at any level if you piss off somebody in government. I mean. Martha Stewart should have gone to the nunnery for 8 smacks with the paddle, right? She had no business spending how many years in jail because she pissed off Blagojevich? He pissed off these guys. I mean, does the guy deserve 14? I mean, that unfortunately, and I would like to see on an end of it, I mean, if it was me, you know, John, and maybe it's because I'm Irish, half. Irish and Italian's an awful mix. I mean, I would sit there and wait if I was president and I thought that the FBI and these other people and the way the thing was coming down. First of all, I got a chance to put my own attorney general in there. Now, at the end of the Blagojevich situation, and I know this guy probably still has power, so I better be careful, but I would come back and say, okay, wait a minute, and I'm the president. And maybe, it's not up to me to watch a particular case. But, and by the way, I couldn't stand Blagojevich, okay? You know, I mean, whatever. I just couldn't stand the guy. Yet, he's tried. He's
impeached, right?
He's pretty much tried. But now he's tried, and there's one juror that says no. All of a sudden, the juror is the name is in bright lights. They're showing up, and I forget if it was him or her at one of their houses. So now all of a sudden, the guy's going to retry it again. But having done all that, we don't move it to another state. I mean, for God's sake, even in Laramie, Wyoming, they'd have moved it. A trial like that in the 1870s, right? They don't move it to another state, and now the guy's out of dough on himself. Didn't he have like a public defender the second time through, or somebody did a pro bono, or I don't know what he did.
I think so. On one of his appeals or something, I think, yeah.
Well, then all of a sudden, now, there's no way on earth that jury pool is not tainted. Okay, so now all of a sudden the guy's convicted. He gets his 14 years because he basically stood up to these people. I think he was wrong in the get-go, but But he stood up to him and said, screw you guys, you know, I want a trial. So now he gets a sentence that has to have been, I'm going to say, 10 times more than they would offer him in a plea bargain. Maybe 5 times, right? And so now if I'm president, if I'm watching this, I'm going to go, God, this sucks. I mean, I want to know, I'm going to go down to my attorney general and I say, you know what, tomorrow, I'm not supposed to get into detail, but this one time I'm going to. Because it's funny about detail, Jan, and I think when you get 15 documents on your desk a day, reports from people, you can't go through everyone and critique everybody's addition. Yet you have to do it once in a while just to see if you can trust people. And I'd want to know from the attorney general, okay, this guy, I forget his name, doesn't matter, who's ever head of the U.S. Attorney's Office here, I guess runs the FBI in his district, right? I don't know how that all works, but I want the records from that guy for the last 6 years. I want to know what percentage of his budget he used Chasen Blagojevich. Because, like, we got internet fraud, we got bank fraud, we got all these other things that they're supposed to be doing. And if I find out he spent 70% chasing a guy just because the guy pissed him off, you know what, Jan? I got to not only get rid of him, I got to reshape this entire department, but I want to have my list of stuff behind me that says, you don't know how to make a budget. This wasn't worth this much. By the way, I would want a whole list of things and not just my opinion or a tweet saying this. You know, when you do this kind of stuff, you have to be thorough about it, I think. And Trump doesn't come across that way. And I don't know. What if you went with every one of his tweets? We like Venezuela. We don't like Venezuela. China's on our side. No, the guy's a bleep. How could you even do policy that way? Even if you like the guy.
You know, I would not do the tweet route. I wouldn't do it as much as he does. The thing is, he's concluded that this is the key to his success. And I would challenge that. I don't think it is, but I think that's how he reads it, and I think it's how the people who follow him read it. And for whatever reason, you know, to me, it's kind of, you know, more than I can swallow sometimes.
Well, Jan, but if you listen, it's working for him. Listen to me for a second.
I can't quarrel with whatever he thinks is his success here.
But look at that.
It certainly wouldn't be my style.
Look at the people through history that have grabbed onto a new media and have gotten tremendous amounts of support from it. I'm going to say that Roosevelt learned from the, who was the Catholic priest in Detroit that was,
Father Charles Coughlin.
Yeah. I mean, Roosevelt learned from him. You know who was a master of radio? It was Adolf Hitler.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, absolutely a master. And Kennedy, after the debate, became the first guy who really used television. He's a good looking guy, a great speaker. But none of those people, I don't know what Hitler did, but none of those people, essentially, that was all done to make people feel comfortable with them. It wasn't to bleed out policy like this guy does. I mean, I understand how you keep connection with your flock, for lack of a better term, whoever it happens to be. I mean, and Roosevelt, I mean, all these people, you need to be in contact with your supporters. I mean, I clearly get that. And you should use whatever new media and easy media there is to get there. I mean, I think that's smart politics. But having that in your communication to essentially your subordinates as well, and, you know, to where you may maybe tell them something to do on a Tuesday, and then Wednesday morning your tweet is exactly the opposite. It's like the guy that just resigned in the Army. A tweet is not an order. Or is it now? I don't know what you do with that. But I mean, I never heard Kennedy on TV, I've listened to some of the fireside chats of Roosevelt. He talked about what we were going to accomplish. He never criticized a general on a fireside chat, right? I don't think.
No, and he was pretty careful, you know, to keep it focused on the listener and make it look like he was one of his constituents, and he felt their pain, and you know, was not about, you know, sending out kind of coded signals to the people around him. I think Trump has found, though, that when he tweets and when he has these tweet storms, it very much gives him some kind of freedom that I can kind of see his thinking. I don't agree with it as a policy. I just think it's dangerous, and it wastes a lot of people's time. But by keeping himself a moving target, he kind of proves to me that he doesn't trust a lot of the people around him. And this gives him wiggle room with a much bigger public than he could get any other way. And he can keep his support and keep his, you know, name, you know, foremost in people's thinking about stuff. The fact that he's inconsistent doesn't really bother him, I don't think.
Well, but the point is...
But it's because the people around him, I think, you know, there's clearly been breaches of, you know, protocol of the law in wiretapping him and passing stuff on. He knows his communications are compromised probably everywhere. And what else can he do but continually bombard everybody?
But you can't,
something that kind of cancels out all that static. So.
On the politics side, John, I maybe disagree with you a little, but not very much. But on the you can't put the I word in front of your policy with North Korea and say the only reason why there's sanctions on them is because of me when I'm running for office a year from now. You can't bifurcate U.S. policy into being Tom Howe's policy. You can't do that. It's a U.S. policy, and by the way, if I got run over by a bus tomorrow, it's still going to be our policy. That's the message you have to give to those people. It's not the only reason why, you know, we're choking you is because I'm choking you. You can't do that. I mean, the U.S. is not designed that way. I mean, even if it's true, you can't do that. You know, you can't say that the only reason why there's rules in this high school is because I'm the principal, and if you fire me, the next guy is not going to have any rules. And nobody buys that, Jen.
Right, but you know, you look at what, you know, came out of this whole Ukraine disaster, is that, you know, Trump's ability or freedom to have a conversation with a foreign leader, which I think everybody would grant him the right to have as president, doesn't really mean very much these days, because there's, you know, all these other people get up and testifying that, you know, he shouldn't have done that. They're the ones, you know, critiquing what he has the freedom and the duty to do as president. So I can see why Trump says, well screw you. You know,
well, Jay, why doesn't he?
This is kind of what he's been backed into.
Why doesn't he just have a tape instead of having a transcript? There's 20 guys on the phone. Then there's a transcript that doesn't match other people's memory. There's one solution to that: have a tape. They don't want one.
Well, that, you know, that may be the, you know, the downside of all this, because I think then it's the question of who has access to that tape. And who uses that tape, either to or do an end run around what was on the tape, and, you know, who shouldn't have the tape and has a copy of it.
But, you know,
so
if there's, being from Chicago, okay, if you want to have a private conversation for whatever reason with the guy from Ukraine, or, matter of fact, a former mayor says to me, back in the day, he goes, I'm riding along in a limousine with Bill Clinton. He starts asking me these questions. And I said, if you want to pull over and take a walk in one of our nice parks, I'll be happy to have this conversation with you. I'm not going to do it in your limousine. I mean, if you want to have that conversation with, this is a formal conversation with whoever the guy was at Ukraine, president to president, where everybody's on that phone. These are the ones that used to tape. They don't tape anymore. They got a transcript. That's why when you meet him at Buckingham Palace, I guarantee you Buckingham Palace has a swimming pool or a rose garden. That's what walks in the rose garden are for. You don't say stupid stuff, I'm assuming he did, on a call where you know 22 people are on there, doctor the transcript and expect the other people to forget it. You know, that's why there's a rose garden at the White House, I think, right?
Well, ideally, but I think I saw something interesting this weekend that had me thinking. Somebody in some YouTube video or some interview somewhere, I think a radio interview, I think, said, well, there is no whistleblower in all of this. There never was a whistleblower. It was all based on an illegal wiretap of Trump's phone call with Zelensky. And Trump sort of, you know, called their bluff and released the transcript, the best record they had of what really happened on the call.
The best record they
had.
And
it kind of threw everything into turmoil, because nobody who's really testified about any of this stuff has done anything but overhear somebody else's version of this.
There's one side
of a conversation.
There were like 20 people on a phone call.
It shows that there was such a complete compromise of confidentiality that Trump did about all he could to out that by saying, "Well, I don't care what your version of it that you listened to by an illegal wiretap. Here's the call."
Jen, I don't know if you've ever
set things a little bit, and I think that may come out before we're through. Otherwise, they wouldn't act so damn stupidly about this whistleblower stuff.
Jen,
I think they're concealing the fact there isn't a whistleblower.
Back in my previous life, I was on the board of the CBOE. All right, and the first thing they did on there was say that you know everything like it says in this room stays in this room, the usual, what's in Vegas stays in Vegas kind of thing. And you're like, wait a minute. It's a membership organization, just like this is a citizenry, right? Supposed to be democracy. It's a membership organization. And so there would be these debates in there, and all of a sudden you'd get the meeting minutes that went through 16 attorneys, and you and I could have drawn blood, and the thing would say, after some discussion, I think when you say there's people, you know, disagreeing with the transcript. Well, the whole process of the transcript, you're not getting the verbatim word by we never right, taped the right. board meeting and said, no, really, John and Chief were throwing haymakers at each other. What's that sound? John's hand hitting Chief's nose. We didn't do that. We purposely didn't. You know, and I think that's what you're seeing. I mean, there's a reason why there's never been a tape since Nixon got tossed.
Right.
Democrat or Republican
alike. My thinking here, Tom, is that there is a tape, that this conversation was listened into but in real time and probably recorded
by 20 people.
And this is not certainly the official record, and to admit that such a record was made would be to admit to a criminal act. So, but I think that's what started this firestorm, and it's kind of exposed the...
Wait a minute, Jen. You just said something. Pompeo was on the call, all right, and so were a bunch of guys in the Joint Chiefs and people on the other side. What I read, 20 to 22 people listening in, or some huge number. What if, because he's one of the few guys I know is on there, what if Pompeo taped the call? Do you think one of those people didn't?
Well, I think somebody certainly did. And it's somebody who probably wasn't invited to be on the call.
No, why wouldn't Pompeo say, hey, every time I get one of these transcripts, they kind of suck. I'm gonna tape it just to make sure I know what was said. I mean, knowing the way the transcripts go down, how is he assured he's going to get the right history of the thing?
Well, and this whole releasing of the transcript is probably unfortunate in the long run too, because now
it's doctor. It's doctor.
You know, you've sort of changed the ground rules in such a way that people know how business is really conducted. And it increases the value of wiretapping somebody you don't like and doing it with you know, by not admitting you're doing it, but using the information you get to embarrass somebody. And I think, you know, I really have to believe there's somebody not part of the call who heard it.
John, I got to believe that you could have been knocked over with a feather just like I was, and you found out there hasn't been a tape in 50 years.
Yeah, I was thunderstruck, really. I would assume that for everybody's safety,
yeah.
There
should
be.
Well, but the whole time, when the two sides are arguing, I'm getting this stuff from the right, I'm getting some stuff from the left, I'm sitting there going, I don't have to read this crap, because someday, somewhere, hopefully, all cooler heads are going to prevail, and they're going to sit in a room and listen to this thing. And I found out, wait a minute, there is no thing. I'm like, wait a minute. You got a guy writing up the transcript, he gets a chance to edit it, then it goes to somebody else, It must end up like the CBOE minutes.
Well, and it's like today when you listen to any of the Nixon tapes, you know, which, you know, gradually have been declassified, and you can listen to them. And it's better to read the transcript in some ways because you can't hear or understand or make out what's being said anyway, given the quality of sound in 1972.
Well, I still remember the Johnson tape when he kept saying, we can't win this war, and the next day he sent 50,000 people. That's one of the most chilling things I've ever read and listened to as an American. John, thank you very much, buddy. Good stuff. SP futures down 275, NASDAQ futures down 10. We're right where we were. We'll have Mr. David Amlin after the break.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox.
The Control Freak's Guide to Life, Money, and Probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices, along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now.
Hello, everybody. Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tommy. Mr. Mel Weber on the board. S&P futures down 275. NASDAQ futures down 11 and a quarter. Dow futures down 15. Individual stocks are down. Nobody's really doing much anything. Got CVX, Chevron down $1, which isn't much. Microsoft down 95 cents. It's a little bit interesting there. And one of the headlines this morning is China reportedly orders state offices to remove foreign tech, which could hit U.S. firms like Microsoft, because certainly there's a lot of foreign tech. Microsoft stuff in China, which I would assume there would be. Don't know how far that's going to go, if it's just threatening or what it's doing. Over in Europe, we've got the DAX down 21.2%. They're down a little more than they were before. FTSE down 6.1%. CAC around on 30. It's 0.5%. Again, we're nowhere near down like we were up on Friday. So no fears so far. Nikkei up 76.3%. Shanghai up 2. Call that flat. Hang Seng down 3. Call that flat. Bonds. Japan minus 0.01. Maybe this is the week. 10-year yield, 1.82, up from 1.78 last week. Bund, down 0.31. It's the only one that hasn't moved upward a little bit. And we've got gold, up 210, 1467. Still can't get anywhere near that 1500 number again. Silver, up a dime, 1661, but it took a shot. It was over 17 not that long ago. Oil, down 56 cents, but still at the upper end of the range, 58.64. Brent, down 56 cents, 63.93. Natural gas, 221, down 12 cents. So Matt Weber's going to tell us all about this cold spell coming in, and natural gas traders are saying, Matty, you weenie, is what they're saying, basically. RBOB, down 1%, 1.62. I bet you didn't know that traders are calling you a weenie, Matty.
Yeah, but it wouldn't be the first time.
Yes.
Are you throwing it to me?
I'm throwing it to you. Okay. All yours, bud.
36 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. Traffic building steadily on the Edens and Kennedy, along with the Eisenhower. Those are our three slow movers out there. No accidents to report, just lots of traffic volume heading in this morning. And rainy, wet conditions are causing for slow, long travel times, so keep that in mind. Stevenson is a little bit better, but not much. Southside expressways have been quiet all morning, so that's good news. No accidents to report, but give yourself plenty of time with lots of rain in the area and slow travel times. Off the expressways, a couple of accidents to report. In Wheeling, a northern suburb, McHenry Road at Lexington Drive, there was an accident. Just west of there at Old McHenry Road at Route 53, there was another crash. And then straight north of there, Winchester Road, westbound at US 45, there was an accident. So a lot of action in the northern suburbs. In the western suburbs, 63rd at Main Street, we have a crash. But everything else looking good out there. Weather today, as I mentioned, lots of rain throughout the area, a high of 49, and then temperatures drop pretty drastically tonight to about the low to mid-20s overnight tonight. So it'll be mild today.
It's high so drastic, come buy some natural gas, what they're telling you.
Not telling me that.
All right.
Right now it's cloudy and 48, which is right near the high again, but tonight it'll be much colder. For our Phoenix listeners, partly cloudy skies, the high of 64. Right now it's cloudy and 56. In sports, the Coyotes topped the Blackhawks 4-3 in a shootout to win the Stocks and Jocks Cup between Arizona and Chicago. Both teams get a point, but the Coyotes win in the shootout in that one. NBA basketball, Bulls lost to the Heat in overtime 110-105. In football, the Bears didn't play, having already played on Thursday, but the Cardinals, they lost at home to the Steelers 23-17. Sunday night football, it was the Rams over the Seahawks 28-12. And lastly, college hoops. DePaul suffered their first loss of the season. They lost to Buffalo 74-69. Northwestern lost their Big Ten opener at Purdue 58-44. Chief.
Just so you know, as long as you don't wing me one of these 21 below zero jobs like last year, anything above zero I'm okay with.
I mean, having to choose between the two, I would agree, but I prefer to be in the 30s or 40s.
Well, I would too, but I'm saying as long as it's above zero, I can roll with it. We don't have to worry about pipes, we don't have to worry about any kind of stuff. Cars work okay. I'd rather it be 30 as well, but the 22 below, eh.
That's right. By the way, we have a bunch of stuff on Twitter, and then we have David as well.
David, how are you?
I'm doing fine. I believe that in a shootout that the losing team gets 1 point and the winning team gets two.
That's correct.
A single.
Yeah, they each earn a point for being tied in regulation, and then if you win the shootout, you get the other one.
Right.
Who's the goalie?
Lerner.
Yep.
I'm going to say that guy's a pretty good goalie, but he's awful in shootouts.
He admitted that.
Yeah.
He's, before the game, and it wasn't a shootout, they interviewed him, and he said, I'm terrible in shootouts. And then he lost.
Yeah, well, I mean, Corey Crawford's really good at them, and he's been around a lot longer. This guy's not. I mean,
I wonder if they're able to switch goalies just for the shootout.
Yeah, but if you're not warmed up, you can't do it. There's no way you're sitting for 2.5 hours after warm up.
They warm up before the game.
I know, but it's 2.5 hours before.
Okay, just saying.
I'm just saying. I don't,
the guy's played, 30 games or whatever, and then he works out during the week, and he works out before the game, and then he's cold?
Well, what I'm saying is if a goalie gets hurt, I think they give the other guy, a few minutes to warm up, right, Matty? You're not going to do that before a shootout. but I don't think you want to be cold.
What if the regular game goalie says, hey, I can't go. I'm stiff. I'm sore. I'm this and that.
I guess, but I mean, it's...
I do think, you know, as far as the rules are concerned, you can put in any goalie you want in the shootout.
I mean, because one's really good in shootouts and one has admitted that he isn't.
And you do have a couple of minutes between the overtime period ending and the shootout starting where a guy could probably go out there and skate a couple laps and stretch out real quick.
It wasn't rhetorical. I was just asking a question.
If you wanted to do that. I don't know if I've ever seen a team do that, though, with a healthy goalie to say, hey, this guy sucks in shootouts. He's great in the game, and we're going to make a switch here.
Before the overtime period, do they redo the ice? Do they?
I was thinking that. I don't think that they do before an extra period, but they don't before a shootout.
Well, you have the little 5 minutes where it's 3-on-3 before a shootout, right?
Right.
I don't think they do recondition the ice.
I don't think they do either.
I wonder if insurance would let you out there warming up with the Zamboni driving around. There's no net. Right? There's no net.
When the Zamboni's out there?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think they remove the net.
I think if I ever retired, that's what I'd want to do is be the Zamboni driver.
It'd be a good gig.
Oh, I thought you were going to say want to be a shootout goalie.
Oh, no. That would be, I'd be like if Putin was going, I'd be getting out of the way. All right, David, we got some tweets. So let's give a quick what you think about the market after a big run up last week. Now, all kinds of news leading up to the 15th, which is the, Now both sides are lobbing stuff at each other. I mean, the Chinese now are talking about if we're getting rid of the Huawei stuff here, that those guys want to wing out some our tech firms there, which, again, I don't see how Apple continues to sit like a rose in the middle of this storm, but they are. It's only down 60 cents this morning. I'd be nervous if I owned this stock. I mean, Apple and Microsoft, I mean, this is a – how can I say this? I'm not going to give any investment advice because I don't know anything – because this is confusing me, so I wouldn't anyway. But the idea that if I own those two stocks, that, by the way, are 11, well, they're last week, so more than 1,100 points in the Dow are those two stocks, and you see this thing with China kind of heating up a little bit here. I don't see how I don't at least protect myself a little bit here. I just don't. I'm not saying anybody should or don't. I'm just saying my mentality is I don't see how you don't protect yourself here somewhat, David. But then again, I've thought that for a year, and they're 1,200 points in the Dow. So,
here's the thing: as often, compounded, quintuplet questions or comments in one of your statements. The first thing is there wasn't a big run up last week. The Dow was net down for the week.
Right.
The Nasdaq was net down for the week. Not a lot, but 0.1% net. And the S&P was up 0.1%. The Russell was the only one up significantly, and even that one was only up 0.57% for the week. So literally, it was a mix between the indexes. Other than the Russell, did it go up a little more than 0.5%?
Finally, the Russell went up. Finally,
right? Well, for the last 6 weeks, it's actually been the best performing index.
Okay.
Beyond that, no question. Market always has headwinds, and I think that besides the fintech stuff, there were comments from Bezos and Microsoft's big time. I mean, it was Bezos and then Microsoft. I don't know if he was COO, CFO, whatever, about fintech selling to defense because of the competition that Amazon lost out on. And is appealing on a big, huge defense contract. There's that. There's, the recent things with China about fintech. There's trade declines in China for 6 consecutive months. There's 2-day Fed meeting this week. And then over the weekend, you got, the December 15th deadline for tariffs, which could go any of 3 ways. They could stay the same, they could be fully or partially rolled back, or they could be escalated. So you really have a ton of stuff this week, and though last week was really mixed, we're just off highs, and while just the sharp 2-day decline Monday, Tuesday of last week, believe it or not, relieved virtually all of the upside extension in technical price momentum oscillators. So the market really isn't extended. It's at lofty levels and at lofty PE levels, or earnings yields, if you flip it. And I would say with all this stuff that might or might not happen this week, it could be a far different picture Monday, or it may not be a far different picture. My thought is that at least, I'm not touting speculative short positions. The market's been too resilient for that, and as we've said, every 2-4% sell-off has been met with buying, or at least short covering. I am not touting or promoting speculative short positions, but I do think that 5%, 8%, portfolio insurance is in order.
What, Mr. Weber is our expert, such as we have one, and security, internet, cloud, and otherwise. What's your feeling on the Pentagon getting in bed to such an extent with a provider?
What was the question? What the hell are you talking about?
I'm talking about the big thing that the Pentagon's cloud is going to be either Amazon or Google or what is your feeling about the whole defense of the country getting in bed with a provider to that extent? And stuff that, it is so obviously
you
is,
have
is
to,
so,
I
so
mean,
important.
Unless, are you saying they should build their own?
I mean, I don't know. That's what I'm asking.
Network?
I mean, every one of these guys seems to have issues every now and again. I mean, I don't know how much more secure the cloud is than just the regular stuff or whatever. But I mean, to me, it seems a little odd. It's one thing to have somebody build a fighter jet. Just how old I am. Have somebody build a fighter jet for you or build an aircraft carrier. It's quite another to say, we're going to get somebody to hold all our information and our war plans, and that seems awful big for me. I don't know what to think of it. That's what I'm asking. You know more about this than me.
Yeah, I don't. I have no idea.
I have an idea.
Go ahead.
Well, with full disclosure, I do have clients in very small positions in Amazon. So I do have a bias. I mean, like under 50 shares totally, so I'm not talking, big amounts. But nevertheless, and I'm not saying Amazon should be the provider. They have contributed the most in the past. But they were favored because of their supposed, techniques and technology and whatever to win the contract. This multi-billion dollar contract with the Defense Department, and all of a sudden it went to Microsoft. And we know as a background, and I'm not suggesting that Trump, called the Pentagon and said, don't take Amazon, take Microsoft instead, but we know Trump's hostility for Bezos, especially with his, newspaper comments, always negative Trump. It just seems to me that, you go with who's the best, or you split it up, or you make it a real competition. You don't say, hey, Amazon, we don't like you anymore. We've dealt with you in the past, and you've built up a very, high-level secure system. But you knocked the president, and so now we're going with Microsoft.
I'm not a big fan of Bezos to start with, and I don't know the guy from Microsoft. I'm not a big fan of the people from Google, as they steal everybody's crap. The thought of those guys housing all the defense secrets of this country is, I mean, I feel, a private part of my body clenching. I mean,
but they don't house it, Tom. It's in the cloud.
Well, you tell me they have no access to it. They don't have a back.
Well, let me ask you this. Let's presume, for sake of argument, hypothetically, that Amazon, Google, Microsoft, and the other cloud providers literally didn't exist, and you had to depend on, I don't know, Salesforce and Adobe and ServiceNow. Do you think, just from what your knowledge is, that
which is very minimal here, by the way,
the Defense Department could, be as advanced in cloud storage, technology as they are now?
The whole idea of clouds,
that's a yes or no question.
Not so sure it is, because there's a big difference between Kevin's outfit, Better World Books, putting some data someplace about who bought Economics 101 at the University of Notre Dame, and not having a massive investigation of Matty Weber's server firm, and Matty Weber and his wife, and if he, well, soon he'll have a wife, and his parents, and you name it, and who else is working in that facility. I don't care if somebody finds out about I bought a textbook at Notre Dame. Now, if that's sensitive stuff about how an aircraft carrier works, I got a real problem with it. I'll be honest
with
you. Okay,
well, then you know, if you do, and you're entitled to your opinion, and you may have more expertise.
I don't. I'm just saying.
Or many others. You know, you have to find somebody or a group of somebodies, meaning in institutions, that have, you know, very sophisticated, high-level technology to help the defense department out. I mean, they're going for bids because they don't have the technology themselves. So if Microsoft, Amazon, and Google are not to be trusted, then you have to say, okay, A, B, C, X, Y, Z are to be trusted, and we'll use them.
What I'd like to see is, I don't have a problem going out with consultants, as we always do, in getting the mechanism. I'm not so sure I want the information housed with them. But any,
okay.
It's somebody
fair.
Else. It's somebody else. Because it seems to me, and again, that's why I'm going to ask Maddie, is anything unhackable?
I would say no. I would say nothing's unhackable.
Okay, so do we really want Jeff Bezos knowing all this stuff? Do we want the guy from Microsoft knowing? I mean, I wouldn't want that responsibility if it was
okay,
me.
Okay, well, so then we come to the point where you don't like either one of them, and I'm fine with that. I'm totally fine with that. You know, they're
I didn't say they didn't like
big,
him. I said,
and they do, obviously, one way or the other, have access. Then the point is, if the Defense Department is not equipped to do the technology for cloud storage and protection of the defense secrets, who do you choose?
It comes down to this, and it's a second derivative. I'll use a math term. I would trust Matty Weber as far as I possibly could, okay? But if I had $1 million in cash, I would trust Matty to walk by that and never take a dime, because that's the kind of guy he is. It's not the same as me saying, I'll give my $1 million over to Matty for safekeeping and trust that he will make sure nobody else steals it. There's a big difference. Or am I just being grumpy?
I don't have the sophisticated knowledge to, you know, separate your hypotheticals, but I think the level of sophistication is so extreme that at this point, from what I've read, the only two firms that appear to have enough technology to handle it are Microsoft and Amazon. I don't even think Google has the cloud expertise to do the kind of, you know, functions, whatever, provide the level of technology that the Pentagon needs.
Well, the thing that you caught me on a bad day with this is because last night I was digging through.
You always catch me on bad days.
No, but last night, get a load of this, Manny. I'm digging through last night looking for stuff for this. I wanted to make sure I got that story about the lady in Wheaton, because I thought that was pretty special. And I wanted to talk about the people in Arizona, because obviously December 7th was, you know, a couple days ago. And I'm reading this thing about how a different way, not on your regular settings on your computer, but if you have Google Maps on your phone, the thing will remember for like a period of years every place you've been. I'm like, what the bleep? And so the guy gives you a way. There's a way, and if anybody wants to hear it, I'll get it over to Maddie, but there's a way where you can't go through to your normal system or even your Google security things. It's in Google Maps, so you got to go to the top of the page, and there's a way through it. I don't remember it. And you can either set it for only remember it for 18 months or only remember it for 3 months. There's no setting for forget it an hour after I was at some place. Now, why exactly does Google feel the need to have that information? I'm not going to say the two guys just retired from Google are going to really give a rat's behind where I went, okay? But the question is, I don't trust them to safekeep the information. You know what I'm saying? It's not about the Pentagon not trusting Amazon with a secret, even though I wouldn't trust Jeff Bezos with any secret, to be honest with you. It's trusting them to keep other people from getting in there. And I don't know, Matty, am I nuts here or what? I probably am. But why do we need it? And when nobody cares if I drove off to see Audrey on a Saturday night. But why do they need to know it? Why I'm sure somebody somewhere must. Why does Google need to have that information for 3 years? Explain that to me.
I don't know.
And if I want to, I can say, no, you can only have it for 18 months. Well, that's swell. Or 3 months. How about never?
I mean, I don't like the fact that, you know, I'm looking for a particular movie, and there's four or five theaters, you know, near our house, and I want to know if it's playing at any of those, you know, places. So I say, okay, here's this movie and here's my zip code and what are the movie theaters around. Instead of giving that to me and you can get it, you can say, okay, here's a theater, there's a theater, what time does the show play. What is the first choice is, we're going to find that theater nearby where you are. So all you have to do is click that, and it knows where I am.
Yeah.
Well, I don't want that. I mean, I don't like them tracking just from my phone exactly where I am and having that information, you know, available. I don't think that's fair, but they do it.
Well, all right. So, what's going to go on with the Fed this week? Are we going to have a rate cut?
No, I think they'll stay. It won't be a rate cut. It won't be a rate increase. I think it'll stay steady. I mean, from what I heard this morning, that, you know, the next likelihood, you know, based on, you know, futures and whatever of any kind of Fed action is July of next year, and that's only 51% chance, and that would be a rate cut according to the way the markets are aligned now. It doesn't mean anything. So I have to go on that the markets tend to sense what's going on, and things tend to look quote-unquote balanced. And so I think they'll sit on their hands, you know, at least 3-4 months, maybe 7-8 months, maybe a year. What'll happen is the market, presuming that's correct, and that is a big presumption, I think the markets will focus on what their commentaries are, because I believe that they decided that 9 of the 10 or 10 of the 10, you know, meetings they're going to have, you know, press conferences. So what they say, if it's a word this way or word that way, will lead to market reactions.
All right, so what happens if you're talking July of next year, say April, with the way these things are creeping a little bit. What if in April the Japan 10-year is positive 0.25 and ours is positive 2.4 or something? Because everybody's sniffing inflation and not just you and me.
Yay! I want to stand up and clap.
Yeah.
You know, maybe that 51% chance of you know, easing maybe goes to 55% chance of tightening. Because, you know, they've said they didn't say in so many words it's globalization, we're tied to what Japan has as far as rates, Germany and the rest of the EU and blah 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 and blah blah blah. But yeah, the markets will anticipate, you know, if Japan's rates go positive, if Germany's creeps back to zero or goes positive, and we do uncover inflation, whether they tell us or not, and, you know, if gold's at, you know, 1800 instead of at, you know, 1450, then, you know, there's going to be pressure on the Fed to raise rates by July.
Hey, we only have a little bit of time here, but I've not, as you know, we've both been sort of busy, but has there been any at all? I mean, I'm surprised. The Bund is still, it's not as negative as it was, but it's still, you know, 0.3 is pretty negative.
Right.
Is there any, because you watch these guys more than I do, these Japanese dudes. Have you sensed any change in policy whatsoever that's all of a sudden caused this thing to go from minus 0.3 to, I'm going to say, zero, almost coming positive here? Is it just going? I mean, have they decided to not pour as much money into the system?
I think, and this is really surface wise, not, you know, digging down deep, but I think that the weakening of the yen has triggered some measure of inflation that is uncovered, that is yielding for an upward push of yields. I think that's the biggest thing. And that's, I mean, maybe, you know, worries over, you know, North Korea firing, you know, missiles continuously into, you know, over their heads into the sea is also, you know, risky. And so, you know, that's force pressure on yields. That's all I know. And I'm sure there's 20 other, you know, items that have contributed to that.
Because it seems it's been so long. All of a sudden, everything kind of creeping on its own seems a little odd to me.
The yen's had a substantial sell-off versus the dollar.
Okay, well, that would certainly help out. As we talk about, you're not on every day, but, you know, Maddie, isn't it amazing, Maddie, how all of a sudden there's just like pieces of news that we seem like we were talking about them daily 2 months ago that we haven't talked about forever? It's, hey, remember this one? It's like, how many different subjects are, I'll say, in the ether, and then you don't hear about them at all anymore? I mean, in the Japanese central bank actions, I haven't really focused in on that in quite a while. And, like I say, maybe we're just overrunning. But, David, thank you very much, buddy.
Okay.
S&P futures down 3.25, NASDAQ futures down 12. Again, as David mentioned earlier, a lot of stuff going on this week. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jocks.
Hey, guys. What's up, G? Want to go to Tchotchke's, get some coffee?
A little early. I mean,
I gotta get out of here. I think I'm gonna lose it.
Uh-oh. Sounds like somebody's got a case of the Mondays.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to ptisecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at ptiprodirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. Dax Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.